Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Former Vice President Joe Biden said yesterday he will only select a vice president who is younger than him. So I guess you're out of luck, redwood trees.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to California Governor Gavin Newsom. Plus, Governor Newsom takes a few more questions backstage at Studio AG. But first, a closer look.
President Trump is retaliating against impeachment witnesses as his attorney general works with his personal lawyer to continue digging up dirt on his political rivals. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. There's one very specific thing Donald Trump loves doing, and that's showing off pieces of paper. He's done it multiple times with letters from world leaders, supposedly secret deals with other countries, and just last week he did it again when he held up newspaper headlines showing off his acquittal at two separate events, including the National Prayer Breakfast and a White House press conference. I think I know what's going on here. Trump's desperate to prove to us that he knows how to read, except no one's buying it. I mean, when your dog carries the paper into the house, no one thinks, wow, he must be really up to date on current events. Hey, Rusty, are you happy with the way the Democratic Party handled Iowa? Trump's like an idiot frat bro trying to impress girls by wearing glasses and carrying around a book of poetry. Oh, this is just my favorite poet, Ralph Waldo Emerson. You know, he was famously very hard to find. They wrote a book about it. But there he is. There he is. Well, Trump did it again on Friday when he greeted the press at his daily chopper-adjacent cue and yell on the White House lawn. Trump was holding up an appeals court decision dismissing a lawsuit by Democrats claiming Trump's business conflicts violate a part of the Constitution called the Emoluments Clause. Now, this is only one of three such lawsuits, and it was only dismissed because the court found that individual lawmakers can't sue the president on behalf of the entire Congress. But clearly, Trump hadn't read the actual decision. In fact, he admitted he hadn't read it.
So I just got this. It was just handed to me. This is the D.C. Circuit, and we just won the big emoluments case. I think it was a unanimous decision. This was brought by Nancy Pelosi and her group. It just came out a few minutes ago. So I'll be reading it on the helicopter.
No, you won't. There's no way you're getting onto a helicopter and reading a dense legal document about something called the Emoluments Clause. After you buckle in, they probably hand you a plastic control stick so you can pretend you're the pilot.
Ready for takeoff!
Still, that decision was Trump's second legal victory of the week. Last week, of course, he was acquitted by a Republican Senate that locked arms to protect him at any and all costs, refusing to hear witnesses or new bombshell evidence, and rushing through a sham impeachment trial to dismiss the charges as quickly as possible. And clearly, he's been celebrating by getting not just some sun, but all of it. As you can see from this very real photo of Trump arriving at the White House on Friday with the wind exposing his hairline, he looks just like he went to the beach wearing a dog cone. Trump only cares about the top 1% even when he's applying sunscreen to his face. Looks like he stuck his face in an empty bag of Doritos and sucked up the dust.
Ready for takeoff!
Anyway, the point is, Trump's Republican co-conspirators shielded him from a true accounting of his crimes last week. The lone Republican who defied Trump and voted to convict him was Utah Senator Mitt Romney, and Trump and his allies are still furious about it. Over the weekend, Trump tweeted out an insane screed from one of his favorite Fox News hosts, Jeanine Pirro, who went after Romney on her show.
The first United States senator in American history to vote to convict a president of his own party, Mitt Romney. The sole and only Republican to vote to convict President Trump. How dare he? How could he? And why would he? You want to use that nothing burger to convict the president of the United States? Are you stupid too? You take non-evidence that the Democrats refuse to present as the reason to convict the president in an economy that is unparalleled, with a military whose strength is unequaled, with a population where 90% are happy with their lives. You really are stupid.
He's stupid. You sound like you got cut from the first episode of Real Housewives of Long Island for flipping over. For flipping over a table at your son's communion. Anthony, take off that Batman hoodie! It's a special day, are you stupid? So Trump's attacking critics and celebrating his acquittal, and now Trump wants to go one step further. He wants his impeachment expunged from the record completely, as if that were somehow even possible, which it's not.
The House expunged your impeachment in the future.
They should, because it was a hoax. That's a very good question. Should they expunge the impeachment in the House? They should, because it was a hoax. It was a total political hoax.
There's no way Trump even knows what the word expunge means.
Of course I know what it means. It means you used to be a sponge. For example, I'd love for these two to become ex-sponges.
By acquitting Trump, Republicans explicitly gave Trump license to cheat again in the 2020 election, something he will absolutely do if he has the chance. Remember Rudy Giuliani's henchman, Lev Parnas, said explicitly in an interview with Rachel Maddow that he was working directly for the president, and yet the Senate refused to hear any of this during the trial.
President Trump knew exactly what was going on. He was aware of all of my movements. I wouldn't do anything without the consent of Rudy Giuliani or the president.
That might be the only time anyone has said President Trump knew exactly what was going on. Most of the time, he has no idea what's going on. That's why he's always meandering around the White House lawn and circles like he lost one of his cufflinks in the grass. Also, just remember, that's a key witness and henchman to the president confessing to a corrupt scheme to cheat in an election, and Senate Republicans just acquitted Trump without even hearing about any of that evidence. In fact, at this very moment, Rudy is continuing to pursue his various insane investigations. For example, over the weekend on Fox News, Rudy claimed that President Obama and Vice President Biden conspired in 2016 to dig up dirt on Trump's convicted former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, who is now in jail for money laundering and tax fraud. But at the same time, Rudy also tried to tease a new podcast.
Obama and Biden representatives tell Ukrainian officials, get me dirt on Manafort.
Right.
I have three witnesses to that.
Really?
One, two, three. If you go to my podcast, you'll see one of them right now.
First of all, only on Fox News do you have to say three and then count to three with your fingers. I'm surprised that's not how Jeanine Pirro ended her monologue. I have three reasons Mitt Romney is stupid. One, comma two, comma three. Second, can you even imagine what Rudy's podcast sounds like? It's probably the opposite of an ASMR video. If you listen to it, you'll lie awake at night with your eyes wide open, just like Rudy Giuliani. And yet, Trump's government is now actually taking these conspiracy theories seriously. GOP Senator Lindsey Graham revealed on Sunday that there's now a formal process in place for sending Rudy's findings directly to Attorney General Bill Barr for further investigation. And today, Barr confirmed that process is real. And not only are Republicans pursuing corrupt investigations of their political rivals, they're also taking revenge on people who crossed Trump, like decorated veteran Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, a key witness in the impeachment inquiry who was on Trump's infamous phone call with the president of Ukraine. On Friday, Vindman, who received a Purple Heart for his service in Iraq, was escorted off the White House premises purely as a vindictive act of revenge by President Trump. In fact, Trump even told reporters he was unhappy with Vindman before the move.
President Trump is charging full speed ahead on his vindictive victory lap, sounding like he's on a warpath against his perceived enemies. First on the president's list appears to be national security official Alexander Vindman, who was fired and escorted off of the White House grounds. His brother was forced out as well.
Trump said Vindman was very insubordinate, reported contents of my perfect calls incorrectly.
Well, I'm not happy with him. You think I'm supposed to be happy with him? I'm not.
First of all, no one expects you to be happy with him because you're never happy, period. You've lived the most charmed life of any human being on the planet, and yet you're constantly scowling. Your face only has two modes, angry scowl or meatloaf that's been in the oven for too long. Second, it doesn't matter if you're happy with him or not. He did his duty and told the truth. Your feelings are irrelevant. Although I have a feeling part of Trump's problems with Vindman comes from this courageous moment during his impeachment testimony.
I'm grateful to my father's brave act of hope 40 years ago and for the privilege of being an American citizen and public servant, where I can live free and free of fear for mine and my family's safety. Do not worry, I'll be fine for telling the truth.
And why do you have confidence that you can do that and tell your dad not to worry?
Congressman, because this is America. This is the country I've served and defended, that all of my brothers have served, and here, right matters.
Thank you, sir. Yield back.
Not only was that incredibly courageous, but also Donald Trump can't stand watching anyone else get applause. That's why he does his weekly group therapy sessions in arenas across the country where he rambles incoherently and sweats like he just did an hour on a Peloton bike. Donald Trump's incapable of imagining anyone doing anything out of any motivation other than self-interest. Like all authoritarians, he demands loyalty and retaliates against anyone who refuses to genuflect to him. He's subverting our democracy and the rule of law to his personal, political, and financial will. And if you're a Republican who can't see that...
You really are stupid.
This has been A Closer Look.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Our guest is the governor of California. Please welcome to the show, Governor Gavin Newsom. Thank you for making the time.
It is good to be out on the East Coast.
We're very happy to have you.
Yes.
So, you are not beloved by Donald Trump. The president is not a fan.
What, are you suggesting that we're not getting along because of our 67 lawsuits?
Yeah, so that is one of the reasons. Yeah. You have your state of California has 67 lawsuits against the president. Yeah,
maybe 68 after today.
All right,
they like that. All right.
On things such as climate, that would be an example of something that you would sue him on. And then you recently... You had a lawsuit against him because California had stricter... You struck a deal with the auto companies to have stricter emission standards than the federal level.
Yeah.
And you sued the president. And how did that go?
This is one of the most consequential issues of our time. And it's not a gross exaggeration. During the Obama administration, they applied the California rules on miles per gallon or tailpipe emission standards, in essence, to get up to 54.5 miles a gallon by 2025. This guy comes in, wants to roll him back to the equivalent of 37 miles per gallon. The automobile companies are saying, wait a second, the rest of the world's moving to electric vehicles. We want more efficient cars. We want to meet customer demand. We're not for your rollback, Mr. President. President goes, I don't care. I'm suing the state of California, assuming then all the car companies are going to join him. Some of the biggest car companies, Ford, substantively said, you know what? We don't care about Trump administration. We care about doing the right thing, applying by the California standards. Trump was taken completely by surprise and as a consequence did an antitrust suit against those that made the deal with the state of California. That suit was just dropped. It was a huge loss for the Trump administration.
Congratulations.
Huge loss.
He has despite sort of being at loggerheads with you and your state, he has also given advice. There were, during the very, obviously, the tragic fires, he came, and here you are with him, and he multiple times during a press conference pointed out that one of the solutions to preventing fires, and I'm not making this up, is to rake the forest.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you're standing with a president after something like this and his advice is to rake?
You didn't like the advice, huh?
I mean, are you taking it?
No, we have no raking policy, though I did see signs all across the state saying, make America rake again.
There you go.
Which I thought was interesting. Yeah. This isn't the you can't make it up file. I mean, so I spent about 7 hours with him that day on Air Force One, Marine One. And I will say this, those that have met President Trump, he's very gracious in person. And I can tell you stories about being on Air Force One and he's ordering food and we're watching Fox News, taking photos, gave me a Sharpie, made phone calls, whole thing, surreal beyond words. But no sooner did you do that, we were at a press conference and he announces, we were just up in Pleasure, California. And we're like, Mr. President, it was paradise, California. And he said, and it's time for the governor to get serious and start raking the forest. And he said he had met with the president of Finland, mm-hmm. who had given him that advice. And so suffice it to say, he quite literally called me a month or so later to check in on our raking policy to see if we had actually advanced it. And, you know, I said, Mr. President, you mean defensible spaces, vegetation management? He said, no, raking. I said, forest management? He said, no, raking. And so suffice to say, it's another one of the issues that we have with the president of the United States.
You obviously have to weigh these issues with the risk of a holdback of federal money. Like, how do you balance that when, you know, you obviously are running a state and there is an issue of federal dollars and you're at odds with the president?
Yeah, look, you got to stand up for values. You got to stand up on principles. We talk about those 67 lawsuits. They're about women's rights. They're women's choice. It's about issues related to equity, issues related to climate change and health care. It's about our diverse populations. I'm going to stand up and have the back of the most diverse state and the world's most diverse democracy. And, you know, if you don't stand up to a bully, if you just capitulate, you roll over, you'll get more of it. And so you're right. There is a little bit of risk. But I think there's a bigger risk of not standing on principle.
One of the things that is a very real problem in California and a problem that the president uses as a cudgel against the state, oftentimes fairly insensitively by my judgment, because these are people, in dire straits, which is he talks about the homeless issue. The homeless issue is very real in California. I believe it's 25% of the homeless population in the United States is in California. How do you approach this problem? I know you're taking it seriously, but what's the approach?
It's immeasurably challenging. It's a crisis in the state of California. We are the richest and the poorest state. We're enjoying the benefits of a $21.5 billion surplus, 3.8% average GDP growth over the last 5 years, 1 out of 7 American jobs since the Great Recession coming from the state of California. But with all that prosperity, lies this reality for anyone that's visited the state or resides in the state, and that's 151,000 people that are homeless. And we need to own that. We need to address that issue. We cannot demagogue it. We cannot point fingers, talk past each other. I was just meeting with his administration just 24 hours ago in Washington, D.C., to try to reach out our hand to see if they would be willing to support our efforts, because this is a humanitarian crisis, and we have got to turn it around.
And I also want to point out that one of the things you're up against, and I guess this is probably true of any governor, it's not just the president. One of the issues here is I think a lot of progressives would say this is a problem we need to solve, and yet you're up against in your state a lot of progressive communities that think there should be more affordable housing, but they don't want it in their neighborhoods. How do you deal with that wing of the party that is more likely to be your supporters?
One of the first acts I did as governor is sued one of our cities, Huntington Beach, for not even zoning housing, let alone planning and producing requisite housing. We have a housing crisis. No surprise that the issue of homelessness has manifested as acutely as it has. But the NIMBYism is out of control. It's an interesting fact. There are two dreams. There's the American dream and the California dream. No other state's attached to a dream. And that dream is predicated on one thing, social mobility. And unless we address the affordability crisis, by definition, the housing crisis, head on, that dream is in peril. So this is one of the most consequential issues in our state, and we are taking a very aggressive and tough stand against NIMBYism and a recognition that we all are in this together, and we are all better off, and we're all better off, and we need to build more housing.
Well, it's very critical, and I'm glad you're taking a head on. Thank you so much for being here, and best of luck with it.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Governor Gavin Newsom, everybody. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Henry. I'm here with Governor Gavin Newsom of California.
Good to be with you.
Thank you so much for doing this.
I love it.
So you're the governor of the most populous state in America. You run the fifth largest economy in the world.
Yeah.
When you're out at the grocery store and you're just like, you're at like the gas station and people come up to you and just like raise every type of issue thinking that, you know, all politics is local, but that you will just fix every little thing someone needs.
You're governor of California. You are accountable to a nation state. And as you say, it's a $3 trillion a year economy. It's larger in population than 163 nations. But I think what makes California remarkable, and it goes deep to your question, is the diversity of the state. It's a universal state, 27% of the state foreign-born, and there's just simply no other place in this country that is living together and advancing together across so many differences, and so you have that expressed no matter where you go in every way, shape, or form.
So you were mayor before you were governor. How did you scale up your experience from being mayor to being governor? That's a big switch, I imagine.
Yeah, someone the other day said, you got to stop being mayor. You're not the mayor of California, the governor of California, because you have a mayoral mindset, which is sort of deeply steeped in pragmatism. But I think being a mayor makes you a much better governor because you have no ideological thread. Doesn't matter if there's a Democratic caucus plan to solve something, because as a mayor, you would never come up with a Democratic plan to fix, you know, a pothole or paint over graffiti or vice versa. So that pragmatism, I think, helps. But it is different mindset. And frankly, it's been a longer and more challenging transition than I expected.
Yeah, I imagine just doing these executive roles just must be, I mean, to me, it's a lot more interesting than like being a senator.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I say lovingly.
Oh, yes, of course.
No, but I mean, because you're the executive. There's a practical application. You're not just holding hands. You're not trying to assert something. And one thing you learn, I'll tell you the biggest difference is when everybody up there celebrating, they got some legislative victory. Program passing is not problem solving. You haven't solved a damn problem. The executive has to implement whatever the legislation or whatever the ideal that was advanced. And therein lies, I think, what some people embrace and what distinguishes their leadership from those that have no interest in the follow through. I think President Trump, a perfect example, has no interest in the executive functions of government except for the use of power over people, not through people. No interest in application and follow through.
I think a lot of us first learned about you in 2004 when you were issuing same-sex marriage licenses, which kind of kickstarted in many ways the marriage equality fight. Tell us what you did last week with Bayard Rustin.
No, I'm proud. And by the way, I was very proud. In 2004, we married 4,036 couples from 46 states and six countries. And it was a pretty intense time because as a nation, we were just beginning to debate civil unions, which people thought was extreme. You had a former governor at that time by the name of Howard Dean that everyone said will never get elected nationally because of his support of civil unions. So it was deeply controversial, but also deeply steeped in the values of my state and certainly San Francisco, my city. So an extension of that is reconciliation and understanding and righting wrongs. And Rustin's a remarkable character. I mean, he's the one that was probably as much or more influential with Dr. King than anybody else in the civil rights movement, the March on Washington, subsequently the Montgomery bus boycott, among other things. But he was arrested in 1953 in Southern California for having sex with another man. And he was arrested under public vagrancy laws. And all these years, it was used against him. It was sort of a whisper campaign, but it's also used against hundreds of thousands of others that were shamed at that time. And what I'm trying to do is highlight that issue so that people, A, are aware of our past, but also reconcile it. And so this was a decade and a half after he passed away that I think has symbolism, but the substance is we want to offer a pathway to others that have family members that may have suffered similar fate.
Do you see your role as a public servant to push public opinion in certain ways? Because it seems like in 2004, that was a way to push public opinion. And it seems like that is the power of the office a lot of people hold.
Life's too short. I mean, you're going to sit there and poll test, then you might as well be a computer program and have an AI do it and do it on a 24-hour basis, 7 days a week. But that's not the point. Leadership is about shaping public opinion and, you know, and having a moral compass and pointing in that direction. It's about the art of the impossible, not just the art of possible. And so for me, I love what Orson Welles once said, don't give people what you think they want, give them what you never thought was possible. And in order to do that, you have to be authentic, but also you have to be willing to take risks. And even, I know people say, well, San Francisco, same-sex marriage seems so obvious. Trust me, that was hardly obvious back then. There was recall efforts or other efforts. It was very unpopular, certainly unpopular with my party, the Democratic Party. At the time, I was banished from the Democratic Convention that year.
Really?
And I can tell you, I'll tell you that there's a book I can write about some of the most popular politicians in America that wanted nothing to do with me, that are quote-unquote LGBT champions today, and everyone's celebrating
Name names,
them.
Governor.
Oh, I would trust me. You have no idea how I'd love to. But the point is, you get a moment in time and don't dream of regretting. And I'll just close on that. I have a lot of friends that are part of this elders group, and they say, well, you know, we should have been more progressive on drug policy, should have been more aggressive on climate change. And while I love the work they do, I don't want to be part of that. I want to be able to say, you know what, maybe we overshot here. Mm-hmm. Maybe folks weren't ready, but we're glad we pushed the agenda further than most folks thought.
Well, let me ask you this, because you ran on a very ambitious agenda for governor. You've passed a lot of legislation in your first year. The presidential candidates have very ambitious agendas. They're going to deal with a different political reality in D.C. than you have in California. Yeah. But what advice do you have to them about actually getting things done? With granted, of course, California is a Democratic state. And
I think the most important thing is you got to prove, not just assert. And so you're running for office, you're asserting a point of view. What California and many other states are doing is proving at scale that our point of view actually has merit, has value. It can make an impact, make a difference in people's lives. And so California is a perfect prime example of that. Huge, robust economic growth. We are enjoying the benefits of a $21.5 billion budget surplus, and we've been able to increase our reserves to record numbers as we're reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, as we are advancing progressive healthcare policies and progressive policies on minimum wage and the like. And so when these candidates are out there, they get to point to that and say, don't tell me it's going to kill economic growth. Yeah. Don't tell me it's going to exacerbate income inequality. That's BS. And so it's incredibly important that mayors, that governors succeed so that on the presidential paradigm, we can advance our agenda.
Well, thank you for doing the work you're doing in California. And thank you so much for being out here on the East Coast for this. I really appreciate it.
And it's great to be with you guys.
Come back soon. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.